Hey, y'all, it's Noxie. Thanks for listening to the Detailed Solutions Podcast. And now, a little bit more about one of our sponsors. Alex, have you heard about the Paint Assassins on Facebook?
No, Noxie. What's that?
I'm glad you asked, you wrinkled little booby. Paint Assassins was started by a dude named Jason Bruno to where detailers can find the camaraderie that they're looking for without any of the negative trolling bullshit like other Facebook groups. Not only that, but they can compete with their work weekly, monthly, or yearly to win prizes. Oh, dude, and they make sick merchandise, so you always have fresh gear to wear.
Whoa.
Anyway, y'all want to check it out? Again, it's Paint Assassins on Facebook or Instagram. Check it out.
If you ain't listening to the Detail Solutions Podcast, then where you at? Whatever. Thought that'd be funny. Listen, before we jump into the episode, I got a couple of thank yous to dish out. Corey motherfucking Taylor. Dude, you are the man. I really appreciate what you did. You know what you did. I know what you did. No need in talking about it on here, but thank you. Thank you very much, man. I appreciate that. Also, Michael Butts, Aaron Allen, and Kyler Goforth. You guys, man, have sent me messages over the past week or so telling me how much you enjoy the podcast, how it's helped you change your business, whatever, man. I really appreciate messages like that. Anybody else out there wants to send me a message, man, I love that stuff. I really appreciate it. And obviously everybody else who listens to this podcast that doesn't send me a message, thank you too. I really appreciate it. I can't imagine where we're going to be with the growth that's coming with this. It's going to be a fun ride for all of us. So let's get to the podcast. You don't want to hear me anymore. All right. Thanks again. Welcome to the Detail Solutions Podcast. My name is Alex, and I am your host. Today, we've got Tony Eye of the Kyger. How you doing, Tony?
Good.
So, Tony, for anybody who maybe doesn't know you, who are you? Where are you from? What do you do?
Well, I was born and raised in just outside of Columbus, Ohio. Grew up out in the country most of my life. Got married in Ohio, moved to Vegas, had a kid there, and decided to move to Florida and get out of the desert heat because that's horrible. Coming from Ohio, used to the green. That's not in Vegas. So
yeah, okay. So I've got a question for you since you've been in both places, because it always seems to be a topic in the Facebook groups and everything. What's worse? Vegas dry heat or Florida humidity?
I'm going to say Vegas heat, because really? until you've been in 125 degree weather, like at least here in Florida, you can still go in the shade and it's a little bit cooler and there's a breeze. Out in the desert, it doesn't matter where you're at. It's still 125 degrees in the shade, out of the shade. Like the first time I went there, we were going from a casino across the breezeway into another one. Uh-huh. And literally, you walk out the door and it felt like somebody was holding a hairdryer to your face. And the thing is, it's like, it's not a nice breeze or wind or anything. It's just sand being blown in your face.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like here it's like being waterboarded most of the time. It's just it's just so hard to breathe. All right, Tony. So when, where, how, why did you get into detailing?
Well, I always loved cars. And I mean, when my first job, I was working at Walmart, one of my first jobs, and started as a temp, worked my way up and ended up making it into TLE because I liked cars at the time. So, why not get a chance to actually work on them? Plus, make a little bit more money. And then that led into detailing my parents' vehicles and on the side at home. And then, well, hey, dad says, hey, if you clean my truck, you can drive it today. Okay, yeah, sure. Plus, I like it. I like driving a clean, shiny vehicle anyways, because it looks nicer.
Right, right.
So going from that and then moving out of my parents' house into an apartment with a girlfriend and deciding, hey, there's 5 dealerships a block away from where I live. Why don't I just try to get on there and start detailing?
Right.
So I literally went out to every dealership and put in a job application with them. And I think it was like 3 weeks later, Volkswagen calls me back and say, hey, we'd like to hire you as a detailer if you want to come in for an interview. And I walked in, you know, dress shirt, tie. And basically apparently I was the only person that had come in that was dressed for a job interview. So
right.
That was kind of a selling point already. And I mean, at that time, I really didn't know much aside from, you know, a basic polish. But I mean, at that time, we still only had rotaries, really. I mean, we did everything with a yellow DeWalt, you know, just that and 3M abrasives. So, and then a quarter cable finally came out and I bought one myself and started using it at the dealership there.
So that would have been what, mid 2000s, early, when did the Porter cables come out? I think like 08 or 708, I think.
Yeah, because I started there in 2009.
Okay, yeah.
It might have been out for a year before I got one, yeah. Yeah, so 2009 is when I started there.
Okay, yeah. Because I remember one of the car washes when I was running it, we used the Porto cables, and we were kind of lucky there was a Lowe's. We were like in the out parcel of the Lowe's parking lot. So if our machines ever went down, we just run over to Lowe's and buy another one for $140 or whatever. Yeah.
Cause I mean, I was the only hourly detailer.
Okay.
And we had 2 other flat rate guys. And they kept asking me like, well, we would like you to become flat rate. And I'm like, nah, I'm good. Because we literally had one detail bay to do anything in. And
Wow.
We would just turn the cars sideways and basically block all the other technician lifts
right.
to be able to do service. Because we, being in Ohio, you know, wintertime cars come in, service washes. So we would have throughout the whole day, probably anywhere from 30 to 50 cars a day, we would have to service wash, plus the used cars and new cars that were sold, brought in.
Yeah.
So having one detail bay was not very efficient. And I didn't want to have to be the one that's, you know, if you get 3 flat rate guys, they're all going to be cherry picking cars and fighting each other.
Yeah.
And I didn't want that headache. So I'm like, well, I'll just stay the hourly guy, which that was good, but could have made more money flat rate, but also would have gotten to pick some of the cars. Instead, I got, you know, we need you to go shuttle this person or go wash this car. Here's this totally destroyed car that we know it's going to take you 10 hours to do the interior, but we need it done in 5, and the other guys aren't going to get paid that. So here's the one for you.
I'm yeah, crazy. Exactly. So what happened when you left the dealership?
Well, I worked at Volkswagen for, was it 4 years? And one half of a year, I was actually a recon manager.
Okay.
But the problem with that was I did all the sublets, did all the cars that came at used cars that needed to have any work done, had to submit the repair orders to the GM or used car manager, have them approve or deny it, give it back to the technician. And of course, they were always pissed off if, well, you didn't sell everything on here. Well, you know, they're not going to pay for it.
Yeah.
But did that as well as detailing. So dress pants, black slacks, dress shoes, and dealing with customers, and then running to the back real quick to polish cars because we couldn't keep detailers.
Right.
That was at that point, I'm like, yeah, this is not paying enough. And you got me doing 3 jobs for the price of one. So, and a Cadillac, Jermaine Cadillac had posted an opening, and went over there and sat down and had a USB with all the cars I had worked on, portfolio and everything, sat down.
Yeah.
And, service manager was like, well, I don't even need to look at that stuff. He's like, you seem and sound like you know what you're talking about. I'm like, well, you sure you don't want to look at this? He's like, no, I think we're good. Not realizing they didn't even have a detailer at that point because the guy had quit and he was the only person they had.
Oh, gotcha.
So they need to immediately fill the spot.
Yeah. So he didn't care what it was. You just happened to be the guy that showed up.
So he tells me, he's like, well, would you like to have your second interview right now? I'm like, well, I'm already here. Why not? So the GM comes in, and on that, this is the craziest interview I've ever had. He literally walks in and tells me every possible thing that I am going to mess up or fail at, and you will not last more than a week. And I'm like, what? Like, this is not what I expected as like a hiring or yeah. a firing phase, but yeah. literally you come in and tell me you're not going to last. You're not going to cut it. I give you 7 days and you're done. He's like, what do you have to say to that? I'm like, well, I guess I'm here to prove you wrong then. So he's like, okay, you're hired. Start tomorrow. So I worked for them and ended up doing all Cadillac. We had Cadillac, Mercedes, Infiniti, Sprinter, and Smart all in-house. And the Infiniti detailer ended up quitting and leaving. So then I did Cadillac and Infiniti and all the used cars for all the different brands.
Right.
There were three Mercedes detailers. Well, they weren't doing a sufficient enough job on like the SLSs and the GTs at the time had just come out. So, okay, well, they send those over to me because I would spend more time, not get paid for it, but the car.
Right. Would yeah.
So then they didn't like that idea because those were the easy cars or the gravy cars to them. So then they would just start not doing the used cars, send all the used cars to me. And I'm like, these things are destroyed. I don't have enough time to do all these. So
right.
I start losing money because they're taking all the brand new cars from me now so that I have to do all the used cars. I'm like, ugh. I'd worked there till past closing time. I had a key to the building at that point. Got tired of that. And then met my fiance, now wife, and got married and decided to move to Vegas because there wasn't really that much going on in Ohio left for me.
Hey, this is Marshall with Hyperclean. We're so excited to be a part of what Alex is doing here at the Detail Solutions Podcast that we want to extend to you 15% off the hot new products that we have coming out at Hyperclean, like Hyperclean Slick, the perfect silica spray. As you get streak-free application, even in the sun, 3 to 6 months protection. Hyperclean Eco One, the new waterless and rinseless that's infused with slick. You also get 15% off of that, or 15% off any of the Hyperclean ceramic lines. That's Uno, Dose, Tray. So if you've got any questions about these, shoot me a text, 918-800-1188. And thanks so much for listening here to the Detail Solutions Podcast. Use Detail15. For your 15% off code on the Detail Supply app. Hey, this is Marshall with Hyperclean. Make it a great day.
Moved to Vegas, and Corey Lutz, who used to work at the specialist at the time, hit me up on Facebook and said, hey, I want you to come over and visit. And stopped in there and basically watched what they did for a straight week because I didn't have a job for 2 months when we first moved to Vegas.
Oh, wow.
And after a week, Theo was like, need a job? I'm like, sure. Okay, why don't you we'll see what you can do and go from there, and end up hiring me like the next day. So
oh, nice. When did you get into, because you're the one, not the one, but I think you're one of the main people that I think about and probably a lot of people think about, of doing crazy disassemblies and everything just to get to areas. I mean, you've even said it yourself, you know, like you take things apart and detail areas that the client will never see kind of thing. Like, I think not too long ago, you took I think it was when you were still with Porsche. You took the hood scoops out of a GT3 RS or something like that. And
I learned a lesson on that too.
Yeah. Polish behind them or whatever. And you're like, you know, polishing the customer. So like, when did you get into kind of doing that stuff? You know, and was it because of just your attention to detail, or was it, you know, did somebody else kind of get you into that? Or
well, it actually started when I worked at Cadillac, because I was working on all the used cars, and then the GM, I finally got him to kind of like start getting in exotics to used exotics to sell,
right?
And because he knew how much time I'd spend on them, how I wanted them to look for them, because most of those cars I did ended up in the showroom because we had a two-story showroom at the time.
Okay.
Upstairs was all new cars. Downstairs was all the used cars in there. And we had a McLaren MC12 come in, black one, and I did that, stripped all the film off of it and polished and coated and took the wing off of it. And then 360 Medina, and started just little tiny things taking off. Like, hey, I can't get to this area, but I know he's going to want a polish, so can we just take this off real quick? And then technician might take it off, or he's like, no, I'm not dealing with that.
Right.
So then moving to Vegas and working on certain cars that we would get in, whether they're vintage or some of the exotics, I got kind of tired of just doing your regular polish and everything and be like, well, you know, this car could look a lot better if we just took this one piece off to be able to get back behind there.
Yeah.
Polish off. Because we're going to have to coat. Well, at this time, you know, we're into coatings and everything. So easier to be able to coat back there, make sure there's no sanding marks that were left from the factory or anything. And Theo was a little hesitant at the time, but I was like, yeah, he's not here in the morning yet. So let me just see how easy this takes off. And then I started realizing that, you know, these cars are built by hand. Well, some of these cars at the time were built by hand, put together. So for them to be serviced, many times these cars have to come back apart, whether it's a rear bumper, spoiler, whatever, wheel liner, like Porsches. The air cleaners, you have to take the rear bumper off to access them. It's designed to be removed all the time. So for me to take that off, it's not anything out of the normal. I mean, yes, granted, it may be a certified technician, but I'm probably going to handle it with a little more care than your average technician.
Right, yeah.
So then I started posting, as I always had, of the work that we did in there and then taking it apart. And, you know, I got backlash from some detailers. Oh, what are you doing? You're going to devalue the car. You're going to mess that up, or you're not certified to take that apart. Or I'm like, okay, well, what if this was my own car? Doesn't matter. I can take it apart, put it back together. Is it going to be done right? We're going to find out.
Yeah.
but I mean, there was a simple little thing that I would do is, okay, if I didn't know how a part came off, go online, look up the replacement part. So they typically have a diagram for it. And then it shows where the screws are going to be, or washers or nuts, or you can see a picture of the back side of it. So you can kind of decipher how it's going to come off or go back on the car. So that was kind of a little workaround if I didn't know, because some of these cars, they didn't publicize information on how to take it apart.
Yeah. Does it ever like worry you when you're like pulling apart some of these multi-million dollar cars, or, you know, million dollar cars? And, you know, because the thing that always gets me is most of it's all plastic clips. Mm-hmm. But if you break a plastic clip, then you got to go get a plastic clip.
I mean, those we usually, well, we dealt with a lot of different dealerships at the time. Uh-huh. So most of them knew who we were. So if we called and needed to say, hey, we need to order a clip or something, it wasn't that difficult. Okay. Plus, we would always, before I took anything apart, we would notify the client. And most of the time when the clients came in, they already had an idea of what kind of work we would do there, and say, okay, well, we're depending on the car. We would take badges off of them just to make sure that it was corrected fully underneath of it, put the badge back on. And that's where people started seeming to take templates for everything and then diagrams from that. But I mean, we would just tell them, okay, we're going to take this off your car, just so you know. If you have any problem for that, let us know. But I mean, we can do a measurement. I did one on a brand new ZL1 Camaro. It had a little side sticker, the emblem on the fender. I measured it from one side to the other. It was an inch off from the factory.
Right.
So I'm like, well, do you want us to put this in the right spot? Because it's not even in the right spot. He's like, are you kidding me? I'm like, no, it's way off. So I mean, every brand's that way. They're all inconsistent. So.
Didn't you have that issue with Porsche that they put it on wrong at like from the factory or something? So when you centered it, and then the guy said it was off centered or something.
Yeah. So the guy had a Cayman, and it said Cayman GTS on the back of it.
Yeah.
And it was a white car. So ended up pulling it off, correcting it, coating the whole car, putting it back on. And the guy's standing there and he's like, I don't think that's in the right spot, because he found out that we took it off and put it back on. He's like, you have a tape measure? Me being the idiot. Oh, yeah, sure. I got a tape measure here. This guy had literally spent 45 minutes in the service drive measuring every letter to make sure they were all spaced right and everything. He's like, well, it still doesn't just look right. I'm like, we just measured everything. Like, it's exactly where it's supposed to be. No. I need this one moved up. It was a legit 1/64th of an inch off one letter. But I told him it's exactly put back on where it was before, because I make the template for that before I pull the letters off. Oh, no, it's not right. It's off of 64th. I'm like, and server guys are just looking at me like, this guy's crazy. So like, okay, well, I'll take it back off and I will shift it just to where you want it.
Right.
Well, I put it where he wanted it, and you could see the ghosting from the factory mark.
Yeah.
There was no way we couldn't polish it out. It was too far ghosted in the paint.
Right.
So I was like, well, just so you know, there's the ghosting there, and it's exactly where you want it. So he wasn't that happy that there was a ghosting mark there, but it's right, exactly, perfect, straight, but jeez. he had to live with it.
So, how did you get into doing the Eye of the Kyger stuff with your templates and everything like that? Because, I mean, you do some pretty detailed templating or diagrams or whatever of all these different makes and models and stuff like that. What got you into doing that?
Well, so not all of those are 100% mine. I do use a third party, and then I have my own templates and everything like that. And then I put them in and I edit and modify. Some of them I have to custom make because if I get a request for like a one of one car that, you know, it looks similar to another one, but it might have a side scoop or the spoiler's different or some trim piece. So then I have to go in and modify the image to add those parts in there. I did it in Vegas because I did a GM Sons SSRS Camaro that was black, and I was doing full paint correction on that car before coatings were out, and was doing that for a Good Guys car show.
Okay.
Jet black, Boyd Coddington, polished wheels on it, and paint gauged the entire car before and then after. And for me to paint gauge it, I found just some rough image of a Camaro so that I could get all the different angles of it, spectrums, and then sketched out and notated all the different paint depths, corrected the car, repaint gauged the whole thing so that everything was documented start to finish. So I knew how much I took off, how much was still on there in case he ever decided to sell it, because it was a custom car.
Right.
So the more documentation you can give to a client, when it comes resale time, if they're going to sell a private party, that's always great for them. Now they have a documented history of how it's been maintained and that the paint has been upkept and everything. So I did it then, and then moving out to Vegas, we would get in random exotics or even some of the vintage cars. Like, I mean, when I first started working for Theo, we had one car collector that had a bunch of vintage ones, all Shelby. So 64 AC Shelby Cobra numbers matching, wow. 65 Shelby Cobra, and then he had 67, 69 GT350s, all numbers matching cars.
Wow.
And these things were pristine. So most of those we just did like a one-step polish and we might coat the car. So then those ones I would start documenting and doing paint gauging and stuff, because I've never worked on this. I know they have, but we don't know how much paint's left on this, and it's all original.
Yeah.
So how far are we going to go? We're just going to do a brightening or a preservation detail on it, or are we going to go full 100% correction on it?
Hey there, podcasters. What if I told you that there was a product out there that would knock out multiple detailing products? Not only is it the ultimate time and money saver, but produces amazing results and is versatile on almost every substrate. It can also be used in your home or commercial businesses. Gen KO is an all-around multi-cleaner capable of removing light to moderate water spots, grease, and grime. It's safe on surfaces including windows, door jams, paint, mat, PPF and vinyl, rubber moldings, plastic trim, and ceramic coated surfaces. My name is Jennifer Turcotte, and after 22 years in the detailing industry, I'm so proud to have a product that is helping my fellow detailers around the world and others. I've tested Gen KO for more than 2 years before the final ready-to-use product was produced. I'm beyond happy when people reach out and tell me how much the Gen KO helped them, and it can help you too. To get your own, you can contact me directly or go to www.igocoatingsusa.com, contact your local IGL distributor or installer, and pick your bottle up today. And don't forget to share your experience on social media using the hashtag GenKOMix.
Took a windshield out of his 64 AC Cobra after begging him, because we couldn't get, basically the cowling is, you know, full fenders cowling past the windshield up to the steering column. And you can't get right up into it unless you want to try to scrub it by hand, which it's never going to look the rest of the car. So take the four bolts out and you slide the windshield all the way out the dash. So now you can correct the whole thing. That was a little nerve wracking because it's all original.
Yeah.
And and if you, it's fairly heavy to take out and it's kind of pinched in there at the same time. So you have to like manhandle out of the car. Okay. And try not to hit anything, the factory paint.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, so from then on, I just started creating little forms that we could use in the shop and give to our clients, and decided, nah, why don't I just create my own site, and that way I can have everything on there, easy to track, and start to try to just add an inventory of them, essentially.
Yeah. No, that's pretty cool, because I always... you know, always see whenever you post them up and, you know, you're like, hey, I think one of the ones that kind of like, I was like, holy crap. You did the Senna one or whatever. You're like, hey, here's the Senna one for anybody who's doing the Senna. And I was like, wow. Like it's pretty crazy.
I mean, you'll have that one guy. There may be the one person that gets to work on the car, but
yeah,
it may come in handy for him. I mean,
right. Yeah.
It's a .org site. So, I mean, the way that I have it is you pay the $2.50, you download whatever file you want. I do have free ones on there as well for generic outside pictures of a truck, car, SUV.
Right.
But I also have interior one. But once you download it, it's yours for life.
Oh, okay.
So it's not like, you know, you download it once and you only get it once.
Right, right.
As long as you save it, it's yours.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, some guys are like, oh, you're charging me $250 for this file? I'm like, if you go anywhere else, you're probably going to spend $25 to $30 for that one, and it's a limited use.
Yeah, they'd probably pay $250 just to go to FedEx and photocopy it.
Yeah, and I mean, you can print that off, you can save it, you can email it. I mean,
right,
I'm sure there have been people that have probably emailed it to each other, but
yeah,
can't stop that. So,
I mean, I was going to say is okay. So now, how did you go from Vegas to come into Florida?
Well, that's where Noxy comes into play. So he calls me up one day and he's like, hey man, Andy's moving to Florida and trying to start up a business out there. I'm like, okay. He's like, I'd like you to be part of that. I'm like, okay, it's kind of weird that you're asking me before Andy's asking me.
Yeah.
Because I mean, is it his business? It's not KXK or anything. So but he was moving from New York down. And I was like, okay, well, let me talk to Andy and see what's going on. And I mean, at the time, we had, I don't think my son was even a year old. No, he wasn't a year old yet. And wife and I decided Vegas was not the place that we wanted to raise our son. I couldn't stand it there. My wife, which pretty much grew up most of her life in Vegas, was like, no, let's go somewhere else, you know. She loves the ocean. We weren't moving to California because cost of living there is just crazy.
Crazy, yeah.
So Florida, well, okay, you got the ocean. You have Disney. She's a Disney fanatic. Even though Florida Disney is not the real Disney in her mind.
Oh, wow.
But so decided, okay, I'll move down here. And I was down here for, I think, 2 months before we had officially moved. Like my wife and son were still in Vegas while I was here working for, okay, I think like a month and a half. And Andy and I were with one other guy at that time. We're doing all the details, corrections. I started doing all the coatings in house once we finally implemented that into the dealership. Cause the original GM wanted to do everything. He wanted tint, PPF, coatings, full corrections, everything in house. And at the time, they were subcontracting out tent. They had a guy doing PPF here and there, but I think he just ended up quitting.
Okay.
Just because they didn't sell that much PPF at that time when I first started.
Right.
So then we got had Expel come in, trained us. I'm certified in tent and PPF through Expel, and I started doing all the UC courts, pro, reserve, and all the PPF myself right there, which fortunately at that time we had a new service manager that came in, and he agreed with our GM that there was shop A and shop B of the facility. So
right.
Shop A has a giant glass wall that you can look right into service and
yeah,
the seating area. And of course, that Porsche South Orlando is a two-story building and has an upstairs showroom that also views down into the first shop.
Right.
Well, I was granted three lifts, in-ground lifts, that literally you could just, anywhere you wanted to stand, you could literally watch what I was doing down there.
Yeah.
At the start with was a little nerve-wracking, especially when you're doing PPF and you just are learning how to do it.
Right, right.
I mean, first car I did by myself was a full-body GT3 RS.
Oh, jeez.
Right before that, there was the trainer that he and I did a full-body black GT3 Touring. I just kind of assisted him on that one. And then the GT3 RS white one, full-body, that was, here you go, have at it. You know, we'll right. give you a week and a half to do the whole car. And here's the limited amount of film you have to do it with, so don't mess up. I'm like, okay. So got literally thrown right into that.
Yeah.
Fortunately, not dealing with like Expel in Vegas, because we would subcontract out PPF. Then I had some of an idea as to how to do it, but learned a lot more hands-on, because you literally have to do it hands-on.
Yeah.
It's the only way you're going to learn with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's my limited knowledge of PPF, because I haven't jumped fully into it yet. I mean, I need to. It's just, it's hard, you know, with all my other work to try and shut down days to do that or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's until you jump in and start doing it, it's, you never know. You well, don't really know.
And learning where to start first, if you say, yeah. if you're going to use a pattern compared to bulking, learning where to start for your alignments.
Yeah.
How to use proper tack or hand tacks, like temporary hand tacks and stuff like that, yeah. and stretching. Because, I mean, before I was like, well, why do you want to stretch film? You shouldn't have to stretch it. You know, you should just be able to put it on there and squeeze you down. Wrong.
Yeah, that's how I felt. It. I was like, it's a pattern. It should just fit right on. Yeah. And just...
Like, no, you have to stretch it 3 inches to get it to this point. Yeah. Oh, okay. Then it's going to wrap the panel.
Yeah, exactly.
If only everything was just flat, you know, it'd be so much easier.
Exactly. And then what transpired or what caused you to leave Porsche, because you're not there now?
Nope, that was so we were subcontracted in. I didn't work directly for Porsche.
Right, yeah, you worked with Andy.
Yeah, Andy right, had yeah. Dealership Network Inc., which is what the company was called. Okay. I worked for that company, and Porsche hired us in. Even though we worked in-house for them, we did right. literally every service for them in-house. We didn't have any off-site places. So worked for that for, I don't know, two and a half years. I think it was 2 years. 2 years, and Andy decided, well, we kept getting, you know, dealerships always want more money.
Yeah,
but
of course.
They don't want to pay subcontractors anymore. They want subcontractor to cut their numbers so they can make more profits.
Yep.
Well, at a certain point, that doesn't become feasible, when especially everything inflates over time. So
right. prices and especially the chemicals. And the work that you guys are doing too is not your typical dealership, you know, wash jobs or detail jobs kind of deal. So
no, that's different too. The first GM that was in there, I mean, he ran the place like a military compound. I mean, okay. that place literally looked like a brand new building every day you walked in. Could be a year, 3 years old. It looked like a brand new building. They were scrubbing floors, scrubbing walls, repainting anything. So he wanted cars to look perfect.
Right.
Didn't matter what it cost, how long it took, they needed to be perfect. And didn't matter whether you were coating it, wrapping it, the highest standard possible, which is not your normal dealership. Most dealerships don't really care. You know, they might be washing a car outside in a dirt covered lot with wind blowing or something.
Yep.
There's your paint correction outside, you know. This, no, totally different. So he knew of us, knew what our standards were, knew where we were coming from, and held us to those. So we had to uphold that. Well, new GM finally came in over time. And, you know, when a GM comes in, well, he wants higher numbers. So
yeah.
we need to start cutting our pricing back so they can make more money. Well, doesn't always work in the end, you know. So Andy ended up selling that business to another company that I will never work for, which basically the other company came in and they had already had an agreement with the GM. So it didn't matter what we had to say. It's okay, right. Effective the 15th, you're either with us or you're done.
Yeah.
And we're like, and I'm like, excuse me, what? You're either with us or on the 15th, you don't have a job with us anymore. I'm like, well, this is the early COVID. So I'm like, well, I still need a job. So I'm going to work with you for who knows how long. But meanwhile, right. I'm thinking, I got to get out of this place. It's not what I signed up for, not what I agreed to. Like, no. And that company ended up actually wanting me to, well, they saw what they could make profit-wise with corrections, coatings, and PPF, and decided, okay, let's put that in other dealerships, not realizing that most of these dealerships don't have a facility like what we're currently working in.
Right. Yeah.
They can't facilitate all these other, you know, levels of detail, but they see the money factor. So, well, we'll just send you over to this place and have you train a guy over there, and, you know, he'll be okay, and he can do it from then on. You don't just learn this in the first day.
Yeah.
Let alone he's working in a dark shop that's got dust and debris floating everywhere and doesn't have the tools or the knowledge to even to do it. But they kept telling me, well, we'll just send him over here and you can train him here. Okay, what am I going to train him on? Like a Porsche? Or are you going to bring in a different car?
Right.
They had no concept as to what it took to wrap a car or correct a car or anything. They didn't even know how much film costs.
Right.
Or, okay, how much a person is going to pay to have their entire car wrapped or just the front end? And when I told one of their managers that, he was totally blown away. He's like, people pay for that? No, people pay for it all the time.
Yeah.
Ended up, a guy that I worked with at the time knew of the owner of Ultimate Auto and had talked to him here and there. And he actually ended up getting me set up so that I could go over on my lunch break and have an interview with him. Told him what I could do. Here's my resume. Here's what I've done. And he really didn't know of me, but his son had seen some stuff online about me.
Right.
And so he's like, well, we'd like to do PPF in-house instead of subbing it out and everything. And well, you do that for Porsche. So if you want, you can start whenever. I'm like, typically, well, with every job I've ever always given a 2 weeks notice.
Yeah.
And this was the one job that I would never put on a resume, never will. So I'm like, I'm that miserable at this place. And I mean, at Porsche, I worked crazy hours. I mean, I'd be the first one in there. I mean, the latest I stayed was 3:30 in the morning to finish doing a full wrap on a speedster for him.
Wow.
And because the car's going out the next day. No, it wasn't. They didn't leave for another 2 weeks.
Ugh.
So time after time after time, and I'm literally had to keep the building. I was the only one there, and that was kind of crazy because I mean, this multi-million-dollar, well, close to billion-dollar operation.
Yeah.
And here's a subcontract guy that has the key to the building that's here working later than anybody else is, and trying to get things done. And I'm like, nah. This started impacting family life and not seeing my wife, and my son turned one. He's now three now, but. Didn't get to see him. I mean, I would see him in the morning for about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I would work at the time I was working 6 days a week. And then there would be, you know, a 7 day week for two weeks straight. So 14 days straight, and then have a day off and work another 6 days and have 2 days off and then another 2 weeks. And I would, I'm like, this it's not working. So decided, okay, well, here it is. The owner of the new company that bought us out, sat me down and he's like, well, I've kind of heard things. I'm like, okay, yeah, I heard that you weren't happy and I'd really like to keep you here and I don't want to lose you or anything. I'm like, oh, okay, well, typically something comes with that. So
right.
Any kind of incentives or no incentives, just I don't want you to leave. We can really build this business and everything. I'm like, yeah, I can build somebody else's business too, which I've done in the past, is helped build a business. Has it been mine? No, but I've treated it as mine because I'm that invested into it.
Right.
So, and in this case, I don't agree with your business to start with. I was forced into it to keep a job, and I don't look forward to trying to build something for you that you're not going to appreciate. So I was like, basically told him, he's like, well, you're going to let me know when you leave, right? I was like, we'll see. He's like, well, you're not going to leave today. I'm like, I haven't made up my decision yet. I have to think about things.
Yeah.
So, well, I need an answer now. Like, I have to think about things. And it was actually the very next day. And I'm like, no, I'm done. Like,
yeah.
The way the hostility that started to come up through the different managers and stuff. And I'm like, seeing how they would treat their employees, I'm like, I want no part in this.
Right, right.
Like, I've come from a dealership swearing that I would never go back to one. Got kind of conned into it to work at Porsche and then realized why I didn't want to go back to that.
Right, right. Yeah.
Independent shop was more the place for me where I could kind of have the free range and get to work on the cars how I wanted to. How I could build a higher standard, because that was the thing, was like taking cars apart was like, okay, well, we can polish cars all day long, but it gets kind of monotonous. So
yeah,
anybody can show a shiny picture or show just the car that's sitting there, but what did you really do to it? So what's a full correction to you? So if a person comes in and they say, I want my car fully corrected and then coated. Okay, well, if you're not getting behind this air duct or this scoop or underneath the rocker panel or, you know, this edge, is that a full correction?
Yeah, I know. I don't think anybody's really defined it.
Like,
yeah, it's always the debate on Facebook, right? Like, you know, if you didn't pull out some or take off some obscure part to get behind mm-hmm. it, did you fully correct it? And I mean, put it this way,
you have a car with a spoiler on it.
Yeah. But
the spoiler may only sit an inch off the deck lid.
Right.
So you don't really have a machine that's going to fit in there.
Yeah.
So are you going to hand polish that or are you just going to leave it alone?
Yeah.
Most people are never going to touch that.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Are you going to coat it? Are you going to wrap it? Are you going to correct it? So instead, I'm just decide, well, how about we just actually take the time here? We're charging enough to our clients to be able to take these things apart and do it the right way.
Right.
So that's when I started taking things apart and showing, okay, here's what a 100% correction is going to be, because we're actually correcting everything.
Right. Right. I think there's different levels to it too, because there's the clients that I get, you know, that, I mean, for me to do what I consider full correction is probably doesn't even need to be done in their eyes. Right.
Because a lot of these things people will never see. You
know? Right. Right. And they'll never, I mean, even taking it to the level of, you know, correction or defect removal, they'll never see that level mm-hmm. really anyways, or be able to appreciate it. You could do a 60-75% and they're going to be fine with it. But then there's clients like that you have, or Eddie has, or Dave Fermani has, or Todd Helm has, you know, and those are clients that are looking for that different level of full correction. So I think full correction just kind of depends on the client. In my opinion.
It really does. I mean, you could have a person call in and say, hey, I want to wash and wax.
Yeah.
But what they don't realize is, well, they may say wash and wax, but they may want an actual paint correction. Right. Or that person saying, I want to wash and wax, may only want a vacuum really, and just the right. car rinsed off.
Right.
So you have to basically have your set questions to decipher what the client really wants.
Right. And that's what I get.
I don't know.
I get the clients that are like, I want a full detail. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, my basic full detail for your size car starts out at $800. Oh my God. Why so much?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, okay, well, it's a $500, you know, quick polish, you know, top it, a $300 interior detail. No, I just need like a vacuum out and a wipe down and a, you know, wash with some wax on the outside. I'm like, well, that's not a full detail then. So, yeah. you know, you're right. You know, it just, it totally.
For instance, the truck and boat you had to do.
Yeah. The truck and boat that I had to do. Yeah. Fuck that truck and boat. Okay, so now you're at Ultimate Auto, and now you're primarily just doing PPF.
My job there is the PPF installer.
Right.
Still do corrections?
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Like, do you still do them? Do you miss it, or are you just cool with just laying film all the time?
Well, after all the years of doing paint corrections, it's a little. Well, for instance, we had the Cannonball Countach, Lamborghini Countach came in.
Uh-huh.
And we have two other detailers. One is actually that used to work with me at Porsche, got him to come over, and now he does paint corrections. And we're trying to work with him to do window tint as well, because he is a certified expel tinter.
Okay.
So I don't want him to lose that.
Right.
Because if you don't keep doing it, you kind of get rusty at it.
Yeah.
So we had the Countach in there and they're doing a paint correction on it. And I'm just sitting there like, I'd really like to work on that car right now.
Yeah.
But I have four other cars I have to wrap right now. So I got to watch pieces of the car be polished. And I actually, one of the detailers, I talked to him because we're trying to evaluate what to use on the car to get the highest gloss out of it without removing too much paint. So those kind of things I get to, okay, well, let's try this and it should make it look better without being too invasive into the paint. Cause you know, the whole thing is preservation.
Right.
You can compound a car as much as you want, but at some point it's going to fail.
Let's try
to keep the paint on there. That car turned out great. It actually, I think it's in a museum right now, or went to a museum to be photographed. And
oh wow.
And but yeah, I mean, I just actually last week got to correct part of a car that I'm going to have to fully wrap. And that one I enjoyed getting to because I hadn't done it in a while.
Right.
Because I've worked for them for, I started working for them in February.
Okay.
So
For a little bit, 6 months, seven months.
That's the second car I've polished since then.
Oh, wow.
We had to do an R8 that was fully coated, but they wanted to stealth the entire car. So Matt wrapped the entire car.
Right.
Like, well, this car's coated. So now we got to compound the car so that the film doesn't fail and, you know, make sure all the edges stick to it. So
yeah.
I stripped the whole car down, do that one. But
jeez. All right, so I'm going to ask you the Dave Firmani question. Does a car need to be corrected if it's getting PPF?
Yes and no. it comes down to the car, comes down to the client. And I mean, 9 times out of 10, no, the car does not need to be corrected. However, in the past, have I corrected cars before it got filmed? Yes, lots of times. And that's when I learned why the PPF shop hated us for, because we would correct the front end, send the car over to get the front end wrapped, bring the car back, we'd finish correcting the whole thing, and then coat it all as one. And for the longest time, they would be arguing with us, like, okay, what did you guys final polish this car with? Because it's really difficult to apply the film because it just wants to immediately tack to the paint and it doesn't give us any time to work or move it around.
Right.
So then those cars, we would use like a primer polish, because now if it's, say, like Essence has some SiO2 in it, allows the paint to be a little slicker.
Yeah.
So that way, you know, they can still do a panel wipe down on, like, say, around their edges or anything, but the film's not going to grip the paint right away. Now that I do PPF and do corrections and coatings, like when I did at Porsche, I would hate it when I would correct the front end of a car and then find out, oh, we're wrapping this car too. And I'm like, now you've just opened up the pores of the paint. Now the soap's going to want to basically settle on the paint and you go to lay film on it. Film's immediately going to want to tack to the surface.
Right.
So now you have no work time to be able to shift it, stretch it or anything, unless you're going to wax the car to make sure that it doesn't grip an edge.
Right.
Or just take straight soap and rub the edges down with soap. So it's, that part becomes a headache. But there was one instance we had a black Camaro that came in and had the front end wrapped before we corrected the car. Because we would always tell them, well, let us correct the whole thing. Make sure if there's any bug etchings or small rock chips or anything like that, we can touch it up.
Right.
Have the front end wrapped and then we'll correct it all. Well, no, it doesn't need corrected. Black ZL1 Camaro. I'll just wrap the front end only and then I'll bring it to you guys. Okay. So goes over, front end's wrapped, brings us this car, and the car was, it wasn't scratched up or anything, but it had a lot of minor surface marring and scratching, you know, fine stuff. But it was enough to dull down the black finish, especially on a GM car. So it looked more gray. So we start correcting the rest of the car that's not wrapped, and we bring it to a high-end gloss to the point where you can see the base texture through the clear coat, which a lot of guys, you know, Noxy just posted a picture the other day, like, oh, you know, what do you see here? I'm like, you know, it's nice to see somebody post that because there's a lot of guys that don't understand what they're actually looking at when they look at the paint.
Right.
They think, oh, it's sanding marks or it's hazy or whatever. No, that's not what it is. So educating your eyes is key. So we had polished this car out so much that it was brighter and glossier than where the film was now. The filmed area looked hazy.
Yeah.
So I had the client come in, he looks at the car and he's like, I can't live with it looking like that. I'm like, oh, what do you want us to do? Oh, it's not like we're going to dull down the back half of your car before we coat it.
Right, right. Yeah.
So he ended up actually sending it back, having it fully stripped, brought the car back to us, corrected the whole front end, rewrapped it, and then coated it all to make sure that the whole car looked even.
Oh.
Now, that is a rare case.
Yeah.
Typically, when you put film on a car, it's going to make it shiny or glossy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to amplify, you know, the metallic in the paint and so forth. So then the back half of the car that's not wrapped or corrected doesn't look as nice. But black car, definitely learned a lesson on that one.
So, so what's the coolest car that you worked on? Because I mean, you did some cool stuff in Vegas. Porsche, you probably got to do some cool stuff, but really at Ultimate, you know, for anybody listening, it probably doesn't know what Ultimate Auto is now. It used to be Ultimate Audio. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like West Coast Customs in a sense. I mean, you custom build crazy cars.
Everything in-house. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we got 4 paint booths in there, a wood shop, a CNC, upholstery division, and
like yeah,
suspensions, tunes, you know, whatever you want, basically. And now they just opened up a whole marine line too. So now we have yachts and boats. So
yeah,
another big adventure that they took on. Craziest car I've worked on. I mean, I prefer to work on vintage cars.
Okay.
Mainly because you don't get to see those cars anymore.
Yeah.
Because most of those cars just stay in a private collection. And they never see the light of day.
Right.
So like the 64 AC Shelby Cobra, that one was fun. Did a preservation detail on that one because we're not trying to remove every defect because you're going to literally devalue the car at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
At that point, years ago, it was worth $2.2 million. And I'm sure now it's way more than that because that was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. I mean, we've the 48 Silver Wraith Rolls Royce limo, right-hand drive, standard. I mean, spent about a month on that car. And
It
went to Pebble Beach for a show and it's a tough one. Worked on a lot of fun cars that I'd like to have.
Yeah.
Could never afford. I mean, because we did a Orlando, Lamborghini of Orlando got their first Huracan STON.
Yeah. I saw you post that.
Got the full body wrap that one. But the difference was in Vegas, I got to drive every car.
Okay.
Because it was just Theo and myself at the time. So.
Right.
I'm pulling it in and out and taking the car apart and putting it together. So there was nobody to say, oh, no, we'll take that car. You're not going to drive that one kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, and most of the time the clients were like, yeah, just take it around the block. It's no big deal. I'm like, sure. Okay. But at Ultimate, it's a bit more strict when it comes to that. I mean, they also don't know necessarily all my past experience taking things apart.
Yeah.
Even though the owner, Joe, is like, well, he came from Porsche, and I know he knows how to take this apart. So when the turbo comes in, he's taking apart. Just get Tony. I'm like, even though we do have disassemblers in house, so
right, yeah. Well, you have the knowledge for it. All right, man. I want to jump into towards the end of the segment, the favorites that I've started doing. Again, I think it's a good thing for anybody else to maybe learn of a product or maybe a better way to use what they're doing or whatever. So what's your favorite compound?
Hands down 101, M101 from Meguiar's.
Okay.
Just because that, it is a dusting product,
yeah,
but that will take out defects. If you are just having the most hammered vehicle that you're going to spend hours on, M101 is going to cut right through it.
Yeah.
It's going to be a dusty cloud and everything, but it's going to cut fast and give you a true finish. But it's also a little more difficult to get and more expensive than, you know, say like 110 or 210, or if you're going to use 3D products or, you know, shine supply. But that one will cut heavy.
Yeah. That's, I know that seems to be what kind of all the old school guys love.
Mm-hmm.
just because it, in fact, it was, I've got a car coming in this week that the guy tried to ceramic coat it himself. So you can only imagine how.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Fixed a lot of those.
Yeah. And so I had messaged Noxy about it and told him what I use. And I said, you know, can you suggest maybe something a little bit better or whatever? And he's like, try M100, you know, a real compound.
So. Well, cause I actually got to help beta test 110 and 210 for McGuire's.
Oh, nice.
Before they launched that product. So.
Nice. That's pretty awesome. So how about a polish? What's your favorite polish to use?
That's a toss up because, I mean, I'll pick up either Reflect or 210, Carpa Reflect or McGuire's 210. Not a big primer polish guy. I like a true finish. I don't like something that's going to potentially mask anything. So,
yeah.
I'd probably say 210, 205 or 210.
Okay. And then what kind of pads do you like to use for cut and polish?
So for cutting, McGuire's microfiber cutting pads. I mean, that's hands down durability. I mean, it's a proven pad out there. Aside from the 3-inch, they had a bad batch there for a while, those that were separating. That would be the cutting pad, aside from wool. So Rupus Coarse blue wool, love that pad.
Yeah, I do too.
Or you're probably gonna ask a polishing pad too. So
yeah.
Either the blue Rupus pad or yellow Rupus pad or the blue Lake Country HDO pad. Which I thought I would hate the blue one because I don't typically like that firm of a pad when it comes to polishing. But out here in Florida, once that pad starts, well, once it's broken in, you'll be amazed. Most of the cars that I would finish at Porsche were literally finished with that blue HDO pad.
Really? See, that's surprising me because that's their heavy cut pad.
No. I think they have, well.
So granted, the blue HDO is the cut, the heavy cut. The orange HDO is like the next level down. Then they have the black HDO, which is like the soft polishing, but yeah, the polishing pad.
No, because, well, granted, at the time I was working with a beta pad that looked identical to the but yeah, the blue HDO, like with a polish, perfect.
Because
it didn't matter if it was on a short throw or long throw, it would finish.
Because I mean, it's a good cut pad, but it's not as, to me, it's not as abrasive, I think, as like some of your other like cut pads are.
Well, and I don't ever cut with foam anyways.
Okay. I gotcha. How about towels? You got a favorite towel that you like to use for removing
residue?
Or ceramic or whatever. Or are you a Costco towel?
I'm not a Costco fan. I've used them, yes. Not a fan of them. I know a lot of guys use them. High-end guys use them.
Yeah.
Just not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
My thing is the corners. So some of those have hard corners on them. And I'm not, the cars that we worked on, I'm not taking the chance at that corner marring the paint.
Right.
Because then I'm really going to be pissed off and throwing that thing. I have to break the polisher back out and I'll take out a marring or a scratch that towel put in. No. They're like, well, I'll just ball it all up in your hand and all four corners. I'm like, that's not efficient when it comes to wiping off something. Well,
Fermani says he just cuts the edges.
I've done that too, but I don't know. It's just, not a fan of those ones. I mean, Auto Fiber has good ones. CarPro has good ones. I'd probably say CarPro's low pile lint freeze, the blue and the orange ones.
Yeah.
I like those ones.
Yeah, that's a good towel. What about sealant? What kind of sealant do you like to use? And I use sealant as a broad term, so it could be, you know, if you're like a hydro, you know, whatever SiO2 kind of guy or a, you know, wax polymer, whatever, or ceramic. Or in your case, PPF is a sealant, right?
Well, yeah, technically. I mean, well, here's the thing. Like, okay, what coating are you going to put on a car? Are you going to put a wax coating on a car, a sealant coating? Because guess what? Anything that covers a surface is a coating.
Yeah, I know. That's why I broaden sealant into all of those, because again, they all technically seal the car.
I mean, that's a tough one, because I mean, when it comes to like ceramic coatings or you know, I have the Roma coatings.
Well, I mean, would you rather ceramic coat it? Would you rather wax it? Would you rather throw an SiO2 on it? Or is it one of those things where it just depends on the car? Like,
well, this is a loaded question for me.
Yeah, I know.
So if it's single stage paint,
okay,
I'll say wax. And if I'm going with a wax, Swiss Vax.
Right.
Because I love Swiss Vax. Brian Guy's great too.
So. Our friend Brian Guy. We love him.
He has some Swiss Vax here on my desk. if it comes to, a sprayed sealant, I would say, I mean, Hydro2 is super easy to use. There's so many that have basically copied what Hydro2 is.
Yeah.
I mean, spray on, rinse off kind of thing, whether it's hand applied or sprayed directly on the panel itself, whether it's foamed on the car. Hydro2, good one, simple to use. Durable, but there's also, if you are into the coatings, the one really, really good product that CP has, Ceramic Pro, would be Sport, because because we were a Ceramic Pro warranty facility in Vegas. We weren't listed on the map, but at the time they had a lot of poor installations.
Okay.
So those ones would come to us for either strip and redo, and so we had product for that. I'd like something here somewhere. Certified through them, as well as IGL, because I think I was the first IGL installer in Vegas. PS2 installer, was a C-Quartz Finest installer, which, I mean, that's been taken away since I left previous company.
Okay.
But for dedicated, if you want to call it glass coating, ceramic coating, SiO2 or Ti2, whatever base coating it is, between those, I would probably say for extreme strength and durability, CS2 titanium. Otherwise, for additional gloss and hydrophobics, Pro has that with like professional or finest reserve.
Gotcha.
But I mean, all the other coatings, IGO has great ones, Kenzo's durable, you know, they're two part, depends on if you want single part, dual part. Yeah. If you're looking for gloss, because not every coating has as much glossifiers in it. Some are more scratch resistant.
Like you said, just depends on what you're looking for. I'm gonna do away with the cleaners one because nobody likes that one. So machines, what's your favorite machine? And not necessarily like name brand, but model or?
Well, I'll say name brand because they've interviewed me 3 times in the last five years, I think now.
That's fine. I don't care if you name drop. I mean, I'm just saying, like, you know,
well, because
I'm looking more of like, what model do you prefer to grab versus the name?
Probably the LHR-75 pneumatic, because that thing is just a workhorse. If you have the air tank to support it.
That's what everybody says. You got to have the air tank to support it.
Yeah, which I mean, we had in Vegas, we had a 60 gallon. I mean, and I would break out the machine all the time. So that air compressor is constantly running. But
yeah,
at the dealership, you had no problem with that.
Yeah, you got the big giant ones at the dealership.
Yeah, because I mean, I prefer Rupus machines, but that's also because I know how to take them apart, fix them, put them back together. I also know pretty much everybody at Rupus.
Right.
But I do have a Flex. I have a 3401. That one, because I bought a 21 ES, which I still have. I bought that and a 3401 literally the same week. 3401 I bought brand new. The 21 was an open box.
Okay.
And they showed up the same day. So I'm like, which one of these am I going to work or use? And I was a Cadillac at the time. So I used the 3401, but the rotation on it and how hot the head unit would get on it.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't like this. And just where the hand grip was. So then I broke out the 21 ES. I'm like, okay, this is easier. And I mean, the biggest learning curve with a random orbit DA is just contoured panels, you know, for stalling, which of course you're never going to have that with a gear driven.
Right.
But once you figure out the curvature, and I mean, even though it's not rotating, it's still oscillating, it's still driving back and forth. So you're still getting cut, it's just not as much.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, and a lot of times if you just change your hand placement or your balance, mm-hmm. it'll come back to you. That's the one thing that I've noticed with mine is when I get in the contours, if I'm pushing down a little bit more on the trigger handle, or mm-hmm. if I'm lifting up more on the trigger handle, I'll get the stall. But if I can just balance it out, it'll come back too on that contour panel, and you can really do what you're supposed to do. And then last but not least, who's your favorite, me or Noxie?
Well, I have known Noxie for longer, but let's see here. Today it'll be you, only because you invited me on this podcast.
There you go. That's all I care about. That's all I care is that you said it on the podcast. I don't care what happens anytime now in the rest of the world.
Let's see. Yeah. I get a text from Noxie.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. He doesn't listen, or he doesn't listen all the way through, because he thought it was BS when Corey said that I was
Well, he should listen. He's an intro to every one of these.
Yeah. He recorded it too. So,
you know, I will say I do like the intro music.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. I told my daughter, I was like, you need to come up with some more lyrics. We need to make this a song. Cause my buddy did such a good job on the music, and then her lyrics were just perfect anyway. So, and when my buddy overlapped them together and everything, it came through pretty good. Sometimes I'll listen just to the beginning, just to hear the song, because I'm.
Yeah, sounds great. My truck on the way to work. So
yeah, awesome. All right, Tony. Well, listen, man, I appreciate you coming on and doing this.
This is my first podcast. So
really,
yeah.
Wow. All right. Taking virginities again.
I've been in one Facebook Live at SEMA with Rennie due to Bob Phillips. But this, podcast wise, first one. Nice. Now my wife, on the other hand,
she has her own podcast. You said your wife does. What does she do podcasts on?
Teaching.
Oh, okay, cool.
She's been a teacher pretty much her whole life.
Oh, okay, cool.
Now she works for another company that basically, well, you can't see because my screen here, but. They Swivel is their company, which is geared towards schools and large companies that have basically a little device that can do a conference call and it'll track you, stuff like that. So,
oh, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, COVID hit and school shut down. Yeah, that company blew up.
Yeah, I bet. Well, listen, man, I thank you for doing this. I still need to get with Todd because Todd made a good point. We got a bunch of badass detailers here in Central Florida. I'm sorry that everybody else listened, couldn't maybe be a part of it. But I think I got to get with Todd, and maybe we need to try and do a dinner night or something like that.
We could do another podcast with Zooming all of us in.
Yeah, yeah. But I think Todd's thing was try to get everybody together, you know, go sit down somewhere and
hang out. Where's he based out of?
He's in Oviedo. So he's like there. UCF area.
Oh, okay.
Or, yeah, that's Oviedo. Yeah, so he's like in the UCF area.
I mean, we got Alberto.
Alberto's here. Guy's here.
Between Brian Guy, Eddie, and myself, we're gonna need a couple days.
Well, Eddie's South Orlando though, or no, Eddie's South Florida though.
He's
yeah.
So well, I talked to him yesterday for 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah. Fermani was correct. He's a talker.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When I finally get Eddie on this podcast, it's probably going to be like a four-parter because I'm probably going to have to chop it up.
Well, because I had texted him over just one little basic thing, and then he ends up calling me, and my wife's like, "Who's that?" And I just show her the phone. And she's like, "Oh, okay. Like, don't even try to bother me for the next 2 hours at least."
Yeah. It's funny. I've been trying to get him on, but he's just so busy. And then like a few weeks ago or whatever, he sends me a text and he's like, "Hey, give me a call when you get a chance." And so, I mean, it was like a Saturday or something. Michelle and Haley were out with some friends or whatever. So I was sitting around doing nothing. So I called him and like you said, it was a 2 hour conversation. Oh, and the whole time, like, he's telling me like his whole story. And I'm like,
he doesn't breathe. I'm sorry, he doesn't breathe.
Right. But I was like, why couldn't have this been the podcast? Like, he's telling me everything. Like, this phone call was literally the podcast.
He's
like,
an absolute wealth of knowledge that like nobody really knows about.
Yeah. And I told him, I was like, Eddie, you're gonna have to repeat this whole conversation when we finally do the podcast. He's like, no, it's okay. He's like, I just want to tell you so you know it. I'm like, Eddie, we could have done
the podcast. He's always open to just filling you full of information.
Yeah.
And whether it's, you know, whether it's leather care or single stage paints or, you know, wrinkle paint, engine covers or, you know, it's endless things to talk about with
him. So exactly. All right, man, I got to go get ready for anniversary dinner. So
yeah, congrats on that.
Thanks. Yeah. one more year down. Don't know how many more to go. So yeah, man, I got to jump off and get ready for that. But again, man, I appreciate it. I'm glad you know, you're doing good here with UA. Man, one day I'll have to maybe swing by and say hi to you or something when I don't have something.
I look at it as a stepping stone. So
yeah,
we'll see what the future has to come.
So. I gotcha. All right, buddy. You have a great night.
You too.
Thanks, man. Bye.